Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and we are diving into the next tier of the running back position. We could collectively say this is a new tier. I guess we could collectively call them the, I'm not entirely sure what to do, but they seem like starters tier. I put potential starter with current situation questions as the actual title. Because they are in an uncertainty. I think that this tranche or this tier of players is actually different than there was last year. I don't think there was really this level of about it, right? I mean, I literally think like that's kind of where we're at. We're like, is that like how exactly do we feel? And that's kind of where I'm at. So there's a different range of costs on these guys. So that would be the initial salvo on this is you're not dealing with people that are super, super expensive. I think really the highest one that you're dealing with over at Keep Trade Cut is ETN is 16, for example. And I'll just read you the tiers here. It's Devin Singletary, Damian Harris, Travis Etienne, Michael Carter, and Elijah Mitchell. So, so you do have some guys that I think are starters that I'm not certain about in terms of where they, you know, about their security, about their longevity. And I think that they might be in somewhat cloudy situations from a stability standpoint. But by and large, I think there's some interesting players in here that if I had to sort of generally put a descriptor on it, or like, is there a takeaway from this from a 30,000 foot view? Probably with the exception of ETN, I think these guys are, more floor probably than ceiling plays in terms of production. Just because I think they leave a little bit to be desired overall. Would sort of be the thought. So ETN, obviously we don't have data. I do have some numbers on him that I think are important. But so we'll work through this tier and give you an idea. The costs overall, I keep Trade Cut, ETN 16, Elijah Mitchell 19, Carter 21, Damian Harris 25, Devin Singletary 32. When you look at Singletary, I think from, really last year, down the stretch of last year in particular, he was really good. And so what you could actually find was he would, down the stretch was one of the top, he was like a top 3 to 5 running back, depending on, exactly how you want to cut it. But really from like week 14 on, so week 14 through week 18, we could go week 14 through 17, which would be, your last week, your fantasy playoffs. If you want to go week 15 through 17, it would be really the 3 weeks of your fantasy playoffs. However you sort of want to chop it, top five running back in terms of scoring. And he was, he at 19.5 points per game, for example, during the playoffs, that was the tied for Rashad Penny with the best. You think about the difference between how people think about Penny right now and how people think about Singletary. I think it's interesting. It's notable, I think, that Penny's actually cheaper than Singletary, which I think is very and they're both like in the 30s too. They're interesting players in terms of their ranges of uncertainty. I think I'd like Penny more just because I think he's got a wider range of outcomes for a variety of reasons. I have some questions about Singletary, but Singletary I think is a good player for, and he's maybe atypical in terms of what we think about him. Came in a little bit underwhelming in terms of athleticism, gets the day two pedigree. So you think, okay, like, maybe he operates in the passing game being kind of an undersized guy. He's actually 17th in rushing score over at PFF this past year, 21st in yards after contact. Out of 64 qualifiers, Singletary ranked last in PFF receiving grade. Moss is still an issue. He's coming up on a contract. You know, so those are all, I think, situations of uncertainty there surrounding him. You know, good, I would say good rusher, not good receiver. Situation probably holds him back receiving wise anyways. But when you look, they led the league in red zone plays, but they were 22nd red zone rush rate. And they, there's only about 70% of their red zone rushes were non-quarterback rushes, which is like bottom five, bottom six of the league. So when you look at it, it's overall, it's a pretty cap situation. You know, if he's not going to run in touchdowns from you know, deep, I think he's going to have a hard time really making consistent production. How would I sort of treat him? I think you know, listen, you can eat innings with him. I hate eating innings at the running back position. It's just, I think, a bad idea. But you can, you got away with it a little bit because he had some high variance. The problem with a guy like Singletary is, did you ever trust that he was actually going through an uptick in value until after the fact, right? That would sort of be the, that's the, that really is the big question that I would have is like, hey, at any point, did you feel super, super confident? And I'm not sure that I would have thought that. So, because I had some spots where I wasn't sure I wanted it, like, oh, he had a good game. Do I really want to start him again? I wasn't sure about that at any given point. So while he finished well, I'm not sure you're going forward, you're going to feel super confident about him being anything more than an innings eater. Does he have value in terms of, hey, here's a guy, a bunch of guys I could sort of cobble together in my running back 2, 3, 4 range and sort of figure it out as we go along? Maybe, but I think if last year, the end of last year was the high watermark of what we see for his career from a fantasy perspective, it wouldn't shock me. That said, like you look in the range, you know, guys going in the range, I mean, there's, I think you're seeing lesser, I mean, for in a lot of ways, I think he's an interesting comparison to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think Edwards-Helaire, if you're negative on Edwards-Helaire, right, you sort of look at these guys similar. Hey, good running backs, maybe not necessarily overt talents, in really good offenses. They're kind of aggregate. I don't think they're really going to elevate their situations, and they're going 10 running backs apart, right? That would sort of be a gap. Again, I would prescribe a more optimistic viewpoint of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but it's interesting, right? But also when you look in this range, you know, who are the guys that are for sure starters? Like Damien Harris is at 25. 26 is Miles Sanders. How sure are we of that? Pollard's a different type of bet. Kareem Hunt's a different type of bet. Ramondre Stevenson, even in a good case scenario, what type of bet is that, right? Leonard Fournette, right? He's a free agent, so it's a different one. James Robinson coming off an injury, but then you look, you keep going down. James Conner, you know, is he ever going to be a guy again? Free agent, Penny, right? Going to be a free agent. Alexander Mattison, right? Injury away guy. Chase Edmonds, going to be a free agent. Kenneth Gainwell, Daryl Henderson. Like as you start looking down, like it's different. I think if Singletary ends up sort of balancing out here, it wouldn't be super shocking to me. But it might be guys over him that are under him right now. And then, you know, vice versa. There could be a lot of movement around him where he stays at the static point. All that's to say, he might be the static point of like one of the last starters. Guys you feel actually confident as a starter, which probably has some value. Is it high ceiling? I don't think it's the high ceiling we had last year. So I think that's maybe I'll put a fine point on it there. I think he's probably appropriately priced. I think he's a different bet than we typically make in the range. Again, he's more innings eater than a guy like Madison is high variance, right? I think if you sort of blend together 3, 4, 5 of those guys, and he's sort of in that tier of your depth running backs, I don't have a problem with it. But I think you have to understand the bet you're making. It's probably a less impactful bet than getting a situation like James Conner or Alexander Mattison, right? All right, Michael Carter is up higher. He's more expensive. Some interesting stuff here that actually I looked into, I was like, whoa, a little bit of eye-opening. Michael Carter breaks a tackle once every 3.8 carries. That's the third best in the league. He was 17th in targets per game at 3.6. He's actually 29th in routes at 15.7, so actually outproducing his route share, which is pretty nice. Expected points per game, he was at 12.7. He was at 11.2 two actual points per game. His expected points per game was 24th. His actual points per game, 35th. Again, he performed better in the second half than the first half. Some interesting stuff on the receiving aspect. 79th percentile in terms of yards per route run at 1.48. 81st in terms of actual against expectation yards per route run at 1.43. The concerns that I have about him, you are a day three running back. You're undersized day three running back. And you're sort of going through a transition period with a team that has assets to spend. There's a lot of, hey, they could land, you know, some depth here. This might be an attractive landing spot for a running back. Like, this might be an attractive, it's an attractive market if someone wants to go play in New York City, right? It's not a situation that's blocked per se. Like, he's there, he's good. But I don't think, you know, if you got like a Le'Veon Bell type of free agent. We don't really have a ton of that this year, but that could have been a destination spot sort of over him, you know, if you were to sort of think back when Le'Veon Bell was a free agent. But you sort of look at it, if a guy like Melvin Gordon wants to come in and be a starting running back, for example, this would be a situation where he could actually do well in terms of all of that. So in terms of having an open crack at a job. So I do think as you look at this situation, that this is one where – yeah, they could kind of add to this. And maybe it's not necessarily someone that comes in and totally puts Carter out of the conversation, but it's going to treat him more like Javonte Williams would have been treated last year. So that would sort of be my thought with it. Again, I sort of – he's interesting, but probably more of a capped upside ceiling guy. He's almost feels like a richer version of Myles Gaskin was last year. Remember how Gaskin – all of his touch stats, all of his efficiency stats were excellent. But we just kind of wondered like how confident you feel about that. Carter's going a little bit more expensively than Gaskin was, but it seems very familiar. You know, Aaron Jones going cheaper, Zeke Elliott going cheaper. Those are a couple guys that I think as, if you sort of look at like what bet are you making with Carter, I think I'd rather try and take either of those bets with Jones or Elliott, for example. Then you get down to a situation where I think I'd feel a little bit more comfortable sort of valuing him, which would be in the Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Damian Harris, Miles Sanders. Right, there's a lot of different stories you can tell in that range that I think Carter fits better there than ahead of someone like Aaron Jones. The other thing I would say about that too is despite the fact that Carter's 22, you do have – And Jones is like 27. You do, and in theory, on the long end of that, there's a longer range for the 22-year-old. You do see the lower pedigree guys get lesser of that sort of extended runway. So what the 5-year difference might not necessarily be as good for a guy, you know, of Michael Carter's ilk. Then, you know, Ezekiel, you know, then someone at a higher pedigree. And I know that, you know, he actually probably has a better pedigree than Aaron Jones. But Aaron Jones, again, an outlier in all of these, for sure. So that would sort of be my angle there. The other thing, too, is just remember, like, it's not that he's actually younger than Elijah Mitchell, for example. Him and A.J. Dillon's only a year older than Michael Carter as well. So you sort of look at that range, there's that there ends up being a little bit of an age divide in that range as well. Elijah Mitchell is next up in this tier, and he had 13.9 expected points per game. He actually performed 18th in expected points per game, 16th in actual points per game. So he overproduced. That's nice. One of the problems that I have with him is 31st in terms of the San Francisco ranked in running back routes per dropback, 31st in targets per dropback, 29th in running back receptions per dropback, and 30th in terms of running back receiving yards per dropback. I think one of the ways that I got the Trey Sermon thing wrong was sometimes you can't really know if you're going to get the, you know, if a team just likes another player more, you know, I think it's fairly obvious that they didn't in May, and that something between May or April when the draft was, and, you know, or they would have taken Elijah Mitchell first, presumably. You know, if something changed, right, that changes, right. That should give us a, you know, that's something that we can't entirely know, and I don't think it was knowable. But if I had to self-scout, I'd say, hey, listen, the situation may not be as good. Like, we sort of are laudatory of Kyle Shanahan generally, and I was in terms of this specific thing. However, there's not a lot of running back receiving game in this offense. And as a result of that, I do think it's a cap ceiling type situation. So if you told me like Elijah Mitchell, you know, is going to kind of be in the running back 10 through, you know, 18 range in terms of points per game, that's good. But I just, I'm not certain, or I struggle to see an elite upside without the receiving aspect to this. The other thing you look at and say, hey, is there ways that this situation could get better? They were 19th in percentage of red zone plays that were rushing. They were actually, they ran a slow pace as well. So 25th in terms of actual red zone plays. They did have the second highest design run rate at 48.5%. So that's good. You know, I would hope that with a new, you know, maybe with a new quarterback, they take a little bit more up-tempo approach, if you will. I'm not sure that's going to happen, though. So that would be one thing that I'd maybe pause about. 20th in terms of play rank at 60.5. So, you know, that's enough middle of the pack there. They were lowest in terms of dropbacks per game. So, you know, there's... I think we kind of know what they want to be, right? If you ask someone, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? Like, we kind of know what they want to be. So I think that's one thing as well. I would say last year in 2020, they were actually seventh in terms of play rank. So I'm not sure how much stickiness there is into some of the pacing stuff. I know there's a lot that sort of can go into that, but they ran, much slower relative pace this year than they did last year. So at least relative to the rest of the league. So I think that's probably an impact, you know, if they trust quarterback more, we'll see. I think the Trey Lance stuff is certainly interesting and we'll see where that goes. At his price, like I'm okay. Like it's okay. I'm not super, I don't think I'm super in. I don't think I'm super out. Like I'd rather have Montgomery and Jacobs above him. For sure. And then like you go down a little bit. There's a guy like AJ Dillon. Again, that's a different type of bet. Aaron Jones, Zeke Elliott after that, right? I think, you know, in a 1-year sample size type thing, I think I probably feel a little bit more confident in like Aaron Jones than Elijah Mitchell, just because I'm never sure what Kyle Shanahan's going to do. So I think there's different ways to arb that. I would probably be pivoting up off of Elijah Mitchell. I think Elijah Mitchell is one of those cases where he's a better version of this, but feels a little bit Damian Williams-esque. Like, hey, if you get a first a couple years from now, is Damian Williams really going to make that pick worse? Probably not. Like, if you do that with Elijah Mitchell, is Elijah Mitchell going to help make that pick late? I think an odds-based bet would be no. And so I think that's a way to pivot it off of that as well. So, and maybe you can't get 2023, but maybe you can get 2024, something like that. That would be, I think, a shot that you could potentially take. Again, I'm not sure I necessarily want to do that straight up, but you can, I think, get that be sort of the core angle and a couple piece deal. So that would be something that I would think to take a look at and kind of play the long game betting against the Elijah Mitchell profile. Damian Harris, we saw more stuff from him in terms of, like, I think, production here. One of the big things that so he gets on the board with the hit. One of the big things that we saw coming into the season was, you know, the big, really big question that I had was, hey, what's the, you know, if it's going to be no Cam Newton, right, that really opens up rushing game opportunities for the running backs down there in the red zone, right? And that could be something that we could really get a benefit from. Six most red zone rushes in the league, which is terrific. 93 attempts down there in the inside the 20. So that's really good. Strong run rate too, 56% in the red zone. That's seventh best. When you look non-quarterback runs, they ranked second in the league in percentage of their rushes in the red zone that were non-quarterback rushes at 92.5%. So really optimizing, that's a huge flip based on where they were last year with Cam Newton. We see that a big deal. We see him second in touchdowns, for example. He's expected for 10. He actually performs at 15. So again, that's an excellent production. Maybe you think, hey, he comes back a little bit. I think the big question that I would have here, I think there's a couple of aspects to it. So 13.5 carries per game is nice. He broke a tackle once every 5.5 carries. That's good for 28. So again, that's above median. You feel okay about that. Not a superstar, but good enough. 1.3 targets per game, ranked 84th at the position. So that's not good. I think the interesting thing here is he was had a PFF grade of 70.2. That was 12th at the position. His yards per route run was actually 1.16. And you can say, Jordan, that's only 27th at the position. When you actually look, again, it wasn't a huge sample because this isn't really what he did. But I think you could look at him and say, well, you know, they don't use him in the passing game because he can't produce. I would say there's two stats that I would point to that I think give some optimism about Damian Harris' passing game skill set. Number one is 1.16 yards per route run was good for 27th, like I said. His expected yards per route run, 1.03. So a nice, solid, 15% performance over expectation. That's good. We like that. Other thing we really like is, when you get opportunities to run routes, what happens? And this is something that I think we have to balance. Can a player do it versus has the player gotten an opportunity to do it? And, and if you don't know about a player, I think that's you have to treat that differently to seeing a player do it and fail. One of the things that I would sort of point to on Damian Harris is when you look at where he ranks in terms of the percentage of his routes that he was actually targeted on, 17.5%. That's a middle of the pack type number. Again, he doesn't have enough routes to really qualify in terms of what I look for. In terms of I sort of grade my percentiles on guys having 200 routes. He didn't get there, but in terms of what he actually got to, he's performed well enough to say, huh. I think there's a couple, I've sort of done the tree diagram thing before. There's a few ways to evaluate a player. One is, well, did he play? And did he get the opportunity to do that? And if the absence of the opportunity to do that probably speaks to something about a skill. However, when you start looking and saying, okay, well, he did, when he did get that opportunity, he did well, he overperformed expectation, for example, all of those things. That's nice. I think it's a balancing thing, right? I think that you have to balance those things. And so whereas, Devin Singletary was the worst receiver, worst receiving PFF grade of any running back last year, Damian Harris actually performs over expectation. And so you say, okay, they haven't given him an opportunity, but if there were an opportunity to come to him, we see that maybe he can do this, right? So it's a delicate balance. I wouldn't bet on him becoming a huge passing game guy, but if a situation unfolded where, let's call it a Jacobs type situation, right? Where Jacobs, basically the rest of the receiving backs got hurt and Jacobs sort of just played above expectation in terms of passing game and ran basically all the routes. And lo and behold, he finished in the top, I think it was fifth or sixth at the position in terms of receptions, right? You could say, is that a situation Harris could do? I think maybe that's asking a little bit much for Harris in terms of the outright volume, but this sort of speaks to a player that could fill that type of role, break glass of emergency type situation. So I don't know if they're ever going to say, hey, Damian, go out and run, go out and run 25 routes per game, or you're going to be our designated third down passing game back on top of this. You're never going to come off the field type of thing. I don't know if any Patriots back is ever going to do that. But what you want is, hey, he's got a decent role as sort of the lead rusher. Ramondre Stevenson clouds this thing. It makes it more complicated for sure. That brings down Harris' price. So you're sort of dealing with that. And at the same time, hey, if things were to break right for him, maybe he gets the volume. Again, I don't think it's the type of volume that Jacobs got this year, but you could see him be the type of player that can, can responsibly handle those targets. So that would sort of be the long version of how I think about Harris. I think he's fine sort of in the range that he's in. Running back 25 still seems like a decent value there. Again, he feels more Singletary-like than he does maybe Etienne-like in this tier in terms of, I don't know if he's going to make a huge, huge difference, but he's going to sort of be, you know, he's going to be an available committee guy to you. And if in any game that Stevenson's hurt or if something really breaks his way, could those things could shift. But, you know, he's probably over a half a touchdown per game projection type guy. So that's kind of where I have Damian Harris at. I think in that range, like, it's fine. Like, I think he's finely priced. The last one from this tier, and I don't have a ton to add because I think we have a ton of uncertainty. We'll have to figure out. I'm going to do a deep dive on some of the coaching landscape changes and all that. But Travis Etienne. So new head coach, Doug Peterson, 68% pass rate in 2020. That was the fourth highest in the league in his last season in Philly. They weren't very good, so that might have impacted it, although Jacksonville's not very good either. I think some things to note here, 11th in terms of running back routes per dropback. So, you know, out there in the formation running routes, 23rd in terms of targets per dropback, 28th in terms of receptions per dropback, 28th in terms of receiving yards per dropback. I have two words for you that would explain that. Carson Wentz. That is a Carson Wentz type performance. He really struggled throwing to running backs, and I think that that is probably more to blame than anything in the Peterson offensive scheme. So I'm on board with Etienne. I think in the range that he's in, you know, I think you could pitch to me that he's got the highest range out of anyone, you know, basically outside the top 10 or thereabouts, right? I mean, if you sort of look in the range of like him, Barkley, Henry, Akers, Kamara, Etienne, right? Montgomery, Jacobs, and beyond. Like, I could get on board with the idea that Etienne could be the game wrecker from that range, right? And I think he's the one. I like him because I think he gives you more options, right, in terms of you have a lot of outs. Whereas if Alvin Kamara and Travis Etienne do the same thing, you know, Travis Etienne's going to cost a lot more than Kamara. Kamara's going to fall in price and Etienne's going to go up. So you sort of have to keep in mind in that range. I think Etienne's probably worth the upside risk. Again, it's like a fifth round startup pick, right? You don't want to miss there, but you could afford to do so. And if you do it right, like if that's a running back one type investment and you sort of do it right, like that's not damning, right? So that would be, I think he's appropriately cost there. Again, I'd rather have him than probably Akers, just because I'm a little spooked on what we saw from Akers down the stretch here. You know, in terms of, I don't think he played well. And I know he's coming off the injury and his short return and all that stuff. I think with Etienne, he's going to have a longer return. Hopefully it will be back board of health and an injury that we've seen, I think, better rehabilitated than maybe the Akers injury. So, all right, well, that's going to pretty much do it. Put a wrap on it for this tier. I'll speed up in terms of kind of doing a rundown of some of the other stuff here at the running back position early next week. But until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we will talk again very soon.